and how are we going to report on an administration that assertively pushes lies, talks about ideas like alternative facts. I never did a story for Marketplace that was accused of bias or of being partial or unethical. This was more of a big picture discussion that I wanted to carry on with other journalists. That discussion is going on now, and I'm really happy to see that that's happening. And I think that the sad thing has been learning from a lot of other journalists around the country that they're afraid to raise these questions, and in particular, journalists of color or transgender journalists who are in newsrooms that are mostly white, where decisions are, journalistic decisions are being made from sort of a certain perspective, and we're all aware that that perspective affects how we cover stories. We should cover them truthfully, we should cover them fairly, but I still think we should be questioning kind of the meaning of neutrality in this time, and a lot of people want to have that conversation, and they shouldn't have to be afraid to have it.
Well, we're going to continue the conversation after the show, and we're going to post it online at democracynow.org. Our guest, Lewis Wallace, fired from the national radio outlet Marketplace on Monday after posting on his personal blog about journalistic neutrality and the challenges of being a transgender journalist in this era of alternative facts. That does it for our show. We'll also link to his piece. Very happy birthday to Hugh Grand. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guster, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, Andre Lewis, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Paul Huckabee, our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, David Prude. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is just about 5:01. Coming up next is your Friday evening news.
On Friday, February 3rd, 2017, from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m., from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary, we'll agitate with the music of Frankie Beverly and Mays. Local and national political commentary provided by Landon Crowell. We will review Mayor Ted Wheeler's first 30 days in office. And musical analysis provided by our art historian, Diane Johnson. From the Grassroots on 90.7 FM, KBOO in Portland.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, The Yes Man Fixed the World, will play Friday, February 3rd at 7 p.m. The Yes Man Fixed the World is the true story of two guys in thrift store suits who impersonate corporate bigwigs and follow the twisted logic of corporate capitalism to its conclusion, exposing the absurdities and ironies of an economic system that ruthlessly rules the planet. Again, that's The Yes Man Fixed the World, Friday, February 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a diverse crowd of 1,500 gathered at the Portland Muslim Education Trust Center to protest Trump's travel ban.
The Portland City Council has voted to require landlords to foot the bill for no-cause evictions.
A four-month-old Iranian child has been blocked from traveling to OHSU for emergency medical treatment.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, February 3rd, 2017, the 15th day of the President Trump hostage crisis.
I'm Stacey Holtman. After a six-hour hearing Thursday night, Portland City Council unanimously voted to require landlords to cover the cost of moving for tenants that are evicted without cause or have a steep rent increase. The temporary ordinance will be in effect for 8 months. The policy will take effect immediately and apply to all tenants, including those who have received a 90-day eviction notice within the last 89 days. Rent increases of 10% or more also fall under this ordinance. The ordinance requires landlords to pay $2,900 to $4,500 to tenants for moving costs based on how many bedrooms the dwelling has. Landlords who rent only one dwelling in Portland will be exempt from this law. This is Commissioner Chloe Udalee's first proposed ordinance since being elected. During her campaign, she vowed to fight for affordable housing through a rent freeze. Opponents say that the city law conflicts with Oregon law, which prohibits rent control. Multifamily Northwest, an association that represents apartment owners throughout the state, may move forward to sue the city. Renter protections are one of the issues state Democrats will be bringing up during the current legislative session. Some possible outcomes are lifting the ban on rent control and requiring a cause for evictions.
On Wednesday evening, Portland's Muslim Education Trust Center was the site for a remarkable show of unity in opposition to President Donald Trump's temporary travel ban. The order restricted travel to the U.S. for immigrants, visitors, and green card holders from Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. The capacity crowd of about 1,500 was joined by the mayors, police chiefs, and civic officials from Portland, Beaverton, Hillsborough, Tigard, and Multnomah County. Portland Police Chief Mike Marshman received a standing ovation when he said, quote, "This uniform is a symbol of fear to a lot of people in the United States. I want it to be a symbol of safety." Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler concluded an impassioned speech with the words, quote, "I am standing with you today because it is the right thing to do." Event organizers said that more forums are being planned and scheduled in the Portland area.
After less than 2 weeks on the job, the Trump administration has entered the military arena with a special forces attack in Yemen. This came on the heels of blocking citizens of Syria, Yemen, Libya, Sudan, Somalia, Iraq, Iran from entering the U.S. FSRN's Shannon Young has more.
The Trump administration imposed fresh sanctions on Iran Friday in what is the latest in a series of drumbeats focused on a short list of Muslim-majority countries. On Wednesday, National Security Advisor Michael Flynn announced the White House was putting Iran, quote, on notice.
Recent Iranian actions involving a provocative ballistic missile launch and an attack against a Saudi naval vessel conducted by Iran-supported Houthi militants underscore what should have been clear to the international community all along about Iran's destabilizing behavior across the entire Middle East.
President Trump has also forayed into clandestine warfare by ordering a raid in Yemen that killed at least 24 people, including women and young children, and a U.S. Navy SEAL. Yemen and Iran are two of seven countries on a travel ban list that Trump enacted by executive order last Friday. Hundreds of demonstrators swarmed the Los Angeles LAX airport on short notice in a scene that was repeated at a handful of other international airports across the United States. The order indefinitely bars Syrian refugees and slapped a 90-day ban on entry for citizens of six other Muslim-majority countries, despite legal travel visas or even green cards. The order went into immediate effect, prompting detentions, protests, and confusion. The move also sparked criticism from members of the diplomatic corps who voiced their opposition through the State Department's internal complaint mechanism. When asked about it in the Monday White House briefing, Press Secretary Sean Spicer suggested the concerns were exaggerated and made by foreign service officers who should consider another career.
Obviously, we're aware of it. But I think that any government official, anyone who doesn't understand the president's goal in this and what this actually was, again, I think this has been blown way out of proportion and exaggerated. Again, you talk about in a 24-hour period, 325,000 people from other countries flew in through our airports, and we're talking about 109 people from seven countries that the Obama administration identified, and these career bureaucrats have a problem with it? I think that they should either get with the program or they can go.
Those Foreign Service officers got a new boss this week with the swearing in of longtime ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State. Civil liberties groups and immigrant advocacy organizations quickly went to court to challenge the refugee ban and blanket revocation of visas and green cards. They obtained a handful of court orders and a temporary stay that has been extended through February 21st, pending a hearing. However, lawyers remain at airports, saying not all officials are abiding by the judicial orders. For FSRN, I'm Shannon Young.
Earlier today, Oregon Congresswoman Susan Bonamici took to the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives to call out Trump's travel ban. Bonamici's outburst was prompted by the inability of Fatemeh Taghizadeh, a four-month-old Iranian child, to travel to Portland for emergency medical treatment. The child had been set to fly to Dubai to meet with American embassy officials on Saturday, but the trip had to be canceled when Friday's travel ban went into effect. Fatemeh's uncle and grandparents are U.S. citizens living in Portland. They've been making arrangements to bring the child to OHSU, one of the world's foremost pediatric cardiology centers. Bonamici showed a picture of the baby and said, quote, "This is Fatemeh. She is not a terrorist. She's a four-month-old baby girl who is in immediate need of open-heart surgery." She called on the courts to overturn the order and allow Fatemeh and her family to travel to the U.S. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and television commentator Keith Olbermann have also lent their voices in support, and Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley has assigned a caseworker to work with the family.
Wednesday night in Berkeley, a talk by right-wing Breitbart editor Milo Yiannopoulos was canceled in the face of a large protest that included 150 Black Bloc anarchists. Yiannopoulos, who is gay, is touring public colleges and universities in opposition to what he calls sanctuary campuses. He has belittled rape victims and the Black Lives Matter movement, mocked transgender students publicly, and targeted undocumented immigrants by name during his public appearances. Yiannopoulos has stated that it's, quote, "almost cool to be a Republican now," end quote. He was banned from Twitter last year after actress Leslie Jones accused him of racist and misogynist attacks against her. He was scheduled to attend a White House press briefing today. Left-wing and self-described anti-fascist protesters consider Yiannopoulos a provocateur and purveyor of hate speech who should not be given a platform by the universities. Yiannopoulos supporters see the outcry as an attack on free speech and accuse the protesters of hypocrisy. Meanwhile, President Trump has threatened to pull funding from UC Berkeley in response to Wednesday's riot and event cancellation.
A Seattle City Council Finance Committee voted 8-0 Wednesday to move $3 billion out of Wells Fargo from the city's operating account. The full city council will vote Monday. The move comes after hundreds of protesters showed up at City Hall Wednesday to protest the bank's funding of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Wells Fargo is one of 17 financial institutions funding the pipeline. According to defunddapple.org, individuals have moved over $56 million from these 17 financial institutions. The bill that would be before the council also requires that social justice principles be considered when awarding all city contracts, including construction projects. There's another bill being put forward to create the Washington Investment Trust, a publicly owned depository for tax revenue. Senator Bob Hasegawa is sponsoring the bill. He says the depository would be available for use by other cities in Washington, and that the important aspect of this bill is that it would, quote, "keep tax dollars in the state working for the state."
Listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7 is Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's forecast is for a rainy day with winds of 10 to 20 miles per hour and temperatures reaching the upper 40s. East of the Cascades and Hood River, freezing rain will change over to rain with afternoon temperatures reaching the low 40s. On this date in 1941, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938, ruling that Congress can fix minimum wages and maximum hours for U.S. workers. The quote of the day is from President Franklin Roosevelt, who said, quote, "Do not let any calamity howling executive with an income of $1,000 a day tell you that a wage of $11 a week is going to have a disastrous effect on American industry," end quote. At the time, the act imposed a federal minimum wage of 25 cents per hour.
And now here's KABU's Ray Bodwell with a look at some of this week's fabrications from the Trump administration.
You're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts.
It's time once again to review a few of this week's more transparent falsehoods from the Trump administration. The week started out with Trump saying that Syrian Christians were unfairly restricted from entering the United States.
Do you know, if you were a Christian in Syria, it was impossible, very, very tough to get into the United States. If you were a Muslim, you could come in. But if you were a Christian, it was almost impossible.
In general, the facts don't support this. In 2016, there were 38,901 Muslim refugees admitted to the U.S. and 37,521 Christians. Specifically to Syria, it is true that the overwhelming majority of the 12,587 Syrian refugees admitted in 2016 were Muslim, but according to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, the reason may be that very few Syrian Christians are applying. The agency calculated that of the nearly 2 million Syrian refugees currently in Lebanon, Jordan, Egypt, and Iraq, approximately 0.8% are Christian. Soon thereafter, Trump bragged that he had personally managed to shave $600 million off of Lockheed Martin's price tag for the F-35 fighter.
We cut approximately $600 million off the F-35 fighter. I got involved in that about a month ago. They were having a lot of difficulty. There was no movement, and I was able to get $600 million approximately off those planes.
The cost reductions were actually negotiated between the Defense Department and Lockheed Martin long before Trump ever met with the company. In fact, the reduced price has already been factored into the defense budget. From here, we go to one of Trump's favorite themes, the carnage in America's cities.
But to be a rich country, we must also be a safe country. Right now, too many families don't feel secure. Just look at the 30 largest cities. In the last year alone, the murder rate has increased by an estimated 14%. Here in Philadelphia, the murder rate has been steady, just terribly increased.
As Mark Twain has said, there are lies, damn lies, and statistics, and we'll leave it to you to decide for yourself which one this is. In fact, there was a 14% increase in the murder rate of America's 30 largest cities from 2015 to 2016. This was heavily influenced by the nearly 45% increase in the murder rate in Chicago alone. However, if you look at the murder rates in all American cities, large and small, over the last 10 years, there has been a dramatic downward trend. Trump singled out Philadelphia, but in fact, over the last 10 years, the murder rate there has dropped 30%, and 2016 showed the lowest violent crime rate in over 35 years in that city. Later, presidential spokesman Sean Spicer stated that only 109 people were, quote, inconvenienced by Trump's travel ban on seven primarily Muslim countries.
When you talk about the 325,000 people, 109 were temporarily inconvenienced for the safety of us all.
Spicer's reference to 325,000 arrivals per day is grossly overstated. The actual number fluctuates seasonally, but typically overseas arrivals average about 85,000 per day in January. And regarding the number of people inconvenienced, the real number is far higher. The Customs and Border Protection Agency stated that in addition to 109 people that were detained, 721 were denied boarding for flights to the U.S., and 1,060 green card holders, these are permanent residents of the U.S., had to get a special waiver to come home. Then, during Wednesday's listening session to kick off Black History Month, Trump bragged about how well he did with black voters.
If you remember, I wasn't going to do well with the African-American community, and after they heard me speaking and talking about the inner city and lots of other things, we ended up getting, I won't go into details, but we ended up getting substantially more than other candidates who had run in the past years.
Trump sets a pretty low bar for the definition of substantially better than other Republican candidates for president. He did capture 8% of the black vote, which is marginally better than Republican candidates did against Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012. But in the years from 1972 to 2004, every Republican candidate for president, win or lose, captured a higher percentage of the African American vote than Trump did this year. We'll finish up with what is arguably not so much a falsehood as an insulting lack of appreciation for black history, stated by Donald Trump and reinforced by Sean Spicer.
Frederick Douglass is an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is being recognized more and more, I notice.
Well, I think there's contributions. I think he wants to highlight the contributions that he has made. And I think through a lot of the actions and statements that he's going to make, I think the contributions of Frederick Douglass will become more and more.
Guys, really? Trump acts like Douglass is still alive and Spicer backs up the boss. Frederick Douglass was a brilliant abolitionist, orator, writer, and statesman, and arguably the most influential African American of the 19th century. He died in 1895. You can't make this stuff up. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
An erroneous report by North Dakota Republican Senator John Hoeven is believed to have sparked a protest that led to the arrest of more than 70 protesters on Wednesday. Hoeven reported that Acting Secretary of the Army Robert Speer had, quote, directed the Army Corps of Engineers to proceed with the easement needed to complete the Dakota Access Pipeline, end quote. Representative Kevin Kramer, also a North Dakota Republican, said that he, too, had received word that final approval was imminent. The comments sparked outrage and tensions flared, resulting in the protest and subsequent arrests. But on Wednesday, Army Major General Malcolm Frost confirmed the easement has not yet been approved, and the Army Corps has restated that an environmental study still has to be done. The North Dakota Joint Information Center released a statement that said, quote, rogue protesters tried to establish a new illegal camp on private property against the request of the tribal council and district leaders, end quote. The Standing Rock Sioux noted that the lawmakers' announcements were premature, but the tribe's lawyer said they are still prepared for another legal battle if the easement is granted.
During the presidential campaign, Donald Trump consistently berated the, quote, global economic power structure that robbed our working class, stripped our country of its wealth, and put the money into the pockets of a handful of large corporations. It now seems that he was just kidding. Earlier today, Trump signed two executive orders that could lead to the gutting of financial regulations that were implemented during the Obama administration. The first order calls for a major rewrite of the rules of the Dodd-Frank Act. The act increased oversight on banks. It was designed to curb the type of risky banking behaviors that led to the Great Recession of 2008. The second order calls for an overhaul to Obama-era Labor Department rules that require brokers to act in the best interest of their clients when offering retirement advice. Trump claimed that the actions would ease constraints on banks, allowing them to lend more money to companies who could then hire more workers. Trump announced the orders, accompanied by Stephen Schwarzman, CEO of the Blackstone Group, and Jamie Dimon, head of J.P. Morgan Chase. Blackstone is one of the world's largest private equity firms, and J.P. Morgan Chase is one of the world's largest banks. After Trump's announcement, the Senate voted to roll back a separate provision of Dodd-Frank that required oil companies to divulge any payments they make to foreign governments. Trump cannot undo Dodd-Frank with a stroke of the pen, but the Republican control of Congress suggests that they will be supportive of his efforts to minimize or eliminate restraint of the banking industry.
Dennis Richardson is Oregon's first Republican Secretary of State in 30 years. He recently shared his thoughts on auditing state agencies, including the Department of Environmental Quality, Portland Public Schools, and the Oregon Health Authority, with KBOO's Don Merrill. He finished up by talking about his encounter with toxic office politics as it related to his deputy, Leslie Cummings.
I think that we need to look at DEQ, for one, because of the concerns that citizens have in Southeast Portland about toxic minerals in their air and in their water. I think the DEQ deserves to be audited to help show what took place and whether or not they're culpable, and if so, what actions are they taking to see it doesn't happen again. I think that the Portland School District deserves to be looked at very closely. We send a lot of money up there, and yet you've got Lincoln High School graduating over 90% and Roosevelt graduating closer to 50%. And what is being done with the resources? Are they being adequately allocated in a way to actually make a change? Or do we just continue to get promises that, I mean, we know that there's lead pipes that the kids have been drinking out of, and there was a bond measure a few years ago, and it was passed, and it was at a time when the leaders knew that there was lead, toxic lead, in the water being drunk by the educators and the students, and yet nothing was mentioned about that. I think that it's time that we shine a light where the lights need to be shown, and I think that Portland Public Schools need to be looked at, the DEQ does, DHS. We owe it to the citizens to look at Oregon Health Authority and see what is, what they're doing and what happened with the whole Cover Oregon fiasco. I was told it doesn't matter; it's federal money. Well, it's not federal money; it's the people's money. I don't distinguish tax dollars based on who's paying it. It's the people's money. And then you also have the situation that a whistleblower has indicated that there was money being spent that wasn't allowed to be spent. It was breaking the rules. And if that's the case, that needs to be disclosed as well. Transparency is so important for people to have confidence in their government. What I will do is, my first order of business is to get to know the organization, the leaders, the people, the staff workers, what's been done in the past, what's good, what areas, and talk to them about if they could make changes, what would they make? Find out where the workarounds are. Because in an organization, there'll be a problem and they just work around it and they get so used to it that that becomes the standard operating procedure. And I think there's a atmosphere of fear in many organizations because of the fear that if they say something, they will be retaliated against. I mean, I believe that that is at the basis for the criticism of my new deputy, Leslie Cummings. She was in the employment office. She was not in charge of programs. She was hired and was working, my understanding is, in the security aspect of it, and that she was viewed as a very qualified person, but she saw things that were going wrong. She actually contacted me when I was a legislator about things that were going wrong with 21 or 22 signatures from other people in the department. I mean, I hired her because she's competent, she's a moral person, she has the background and the experience that I need for this office. And she has seen what happens to whistleblowers who do not qualify as team players. In China, they talk about that as being the blade of grass. They say in China, you do not want to be the single blade of grass that grows too high, or they will come and cut you off.
That was Oregon Secretary of State Dennis Richardson speaking to KBOO's Don Merrill.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott has blocked funding to Travis County, home to Austin, the state capital, over the county's refusal to cooperate with federal authorities on detaining undocumented immigrants. The Republican governor withheld $1.5 million in grant money Wednesday after Travis County Sheriff Sally Hernandez said the county's jails would not follow federal immigration orders in most cases. Hernandez was elected in November. She has ordered her deputies not to ask those in custody about their immigration status and would only go along with federal orders in cases involving homicide, human trafficking, and aggravated sexual assault. Sanctuary cities are municipalities where local authorities refuse to ask a person's immigration status or hold undocumented workers even after being asked to do so by federal officials. And the governor is cracking down on sanctuary cities throughout Texas. According to the Associated Press, $1.5 million withheld from the city would have gone to crime victim services and other programs.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Stacey Holtman, Tom Flynn, and Khalid Mosley. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Don Merrill. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama, and the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Charity Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I am Stacey Holtman.
And I'm Liam Delta. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, Margot Black from Portland Tenants United joins Cecil and Celeste to talk about ways to deal with the ongoing housing crisis in Portland. At 9, social and political commentary from the Old Mo Variety Hour. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein speaks with the